Define traumatic. I'd rather not.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 3, Revenge. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
We have some thrilling site business up top. Let's get to it, Sarah.
Our thrilling news is that thanks to Patreon supporters of this fine podcast at patreon.com/againwiththis, we are now up to 222 bonus episodes. totally lost my train of thought in that mud moment. Two bonus episodes every month. Woo! That's every other week. And the next one coming down the pike is... Let's watch Ian Ziering in an episode of Guiding Light. This is not the most splendiferous Guiding Light episode mullet-wise, but he is in a hot air balloon. The copy we found of it includes all the commercials from the local Tulsa station in 1987. We will link it in the show notes. Please watch along with us. And you can listen to that episode and all the other bonus episodes on our Patreon, patreon.com/againwiththis. Thank you so much.
Are you going to be talking about the ads too?
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, okay, that's good. Almost all I want to talk about, to be honest.
Okay, yeah. Good. I might have to watch that thing because I love myself some old ad footage.
That episode will be dropping May 1st.
Mayday, which is what you'll be yelling after you see the ad for Diet Pringles.
Oh yeah, pre-Olestra, alas. Ooh. But yes, they are Pringles Light. Yeah, anyway, that is not our topic today. Let us get to this episode, starting with our C plot. Amanda inserts herself between Joe and Jake with a modeling job offer. As you recall, this was started to be tipped off in the last episode. And so now in her office, Amanda and Joe review the photos from the stupid motorcycle race. Amanda, of course, is super horny for them and wants to pitch Jake as the prototype guy for the campaign. Amanda also needs moody shots of the track at night without Jake in them. Somehow, Joe does not see what is actually happening here. And as soon as Joe has walked out, Amanda calls Jake. When we see her next, she's out having dinner with Jake and pitching him on modeling for her. He self-deprecatingly puts her off, but she convinces him to be the star of the campaign, the Sagebrush Beer Man, or so it seems. And the next morning, Joe is ranting about how Amanda divided and conquered them the night before. Clip 2.
God, she's manipulative. You just have to admire a woman like that, you know? No wonder she's so successful.
Fucking A.
I mean, I kind of like that. I mean, I had it in my notes originally as like, she hates her, but at the same time, it's like, you got to respect her. And, you know, I get it.
No game, recognized game.
Yeah, fair seriously. So he tells her the reason for the strictly business dinner that he had with Amanda, sort of sheepish and sort of proud of the opportunity to start a career as a model. Joe is incredulous that he's considering it and thinks Amanda's just buttering him up because she's trying to fuck. But there's only woman he's trying to fuck, and it's Joe. And when Joe later goes to D&D to drop off the moody photos of the track, she stops on the way to Amanda's office to gossip to Allison about Amanda's fuckery with Jake. And Allison warns her not to turn her back on Amanda, which, you know what? Good advice, honestly.
Yeah, it's true.
Anything to add?
No, except that, like, honestly, facing Amanda will not save you.
So true.
That's why she's the queen.
It's true. Moving on to our B plot, Sydney tries to replace Jane. Oh. At Jane's, Sydney and her, we're divided on this. In my notes, I have it as her adorable, oversized, early 90s dress. You have it as raiding Mrs. Roper's closet. And you know what? Yeah. The thing about the early 90s is we're both right.
I mean, that wasn't necessarily a clock. It right. just was weird. It's a weird character note for her.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, at another point in, I think, the next episode, she's wearing what appears to be a mock turtleneck sweatshirt mm-hmm. sized for David Silver mm-hmm. to sleep in. So, and it's supposed to be summer.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's not uncute.
Right.
But it's not the kind of uncute that you would expect from Sydney.
Yeah. They seem, at this stage, they're torn between dressing her as like kid sister Skipper or femme fatale in the making, and that is reflected in her wardrobe, I find.
I think that's true. I think that but in her mind she's definitely femme fatale, viz mm-hmm. the leather plain outfit. So
yeah.
I mean, Sydney is so painful to watch even at this point. It's really such an interesting performance from Laura Layton, because she's like infuriating and pitiable at the same time, and it's like so much more Jennifer Jason Leigh in Georgia than this show deserves.
Yeah
Anyway,
so Sydney and this dress claim everyone is wondering if Jane is going to move back to Chicago. Now Jane is not, because of her friends and career. So Sydney pivots to guessing that Jane is staying because she thinks she and Michael might still reconcile, which Jane does not. Sydney then goes for the hard sell, citing Michael's fancy career, great personality, that's a quote, and cute butt, which 2 out of 3 tops.
Yeah.
Jane starts to get suspicious about which side Sydney is on. Sydney claims that he called, that's how she was communicating with him, and Jane lets herself get drawn into countering all the points that Michael supposedly made to Sydney in favor of getting back together. Michael might be the closest thing to Prince Charming Jane is ever going to get, Sydney suggests. Kick this woman out of your home, Jane. You don't need this shit.
Really? But
Jane stops short of that, but says if Sydney talks to Michael again, Jane is going to send her back to Chicago. At the hospital, Michael tells Kimberly that his lawyer, a lady, is going to push back the depositions as long as possible. Kimberly would have thought that he would want to get it over with. She does. But Michael's thinking is if Jane wants to play hardball, it'll torture Jane, not them, because he's not listening to the words that Kimberly is in the process of saying directly to him right now about what she wants in their relationship, because it's Michael. Kimberly can't believe they're supposed to go on with their lives as if nothing's happening, but he reminds her that living well is the best revenge, and they're kissing on it when Michael looks up and sees Matt standing there and reintroduces him to Kimberly, as we will recall they met at Christmas. And as she takes off, there's some casual piggery in clip 3.
She's got a great ass, doesn't she? Yeah, sure. I think so.
Oh, Matt.
That was very cute. So we then learn that Matt did get the job, which is why he's there. He thanks Michael for his intervention and also doesn't want Michael to feel awkward with Matt due to the Jane situation, because Matt is totally neutral and Michael basically laughs in his face while thanking him because Matt is such a simp.
Yeah.
The next morning, Michael's trying to get dressed, but he doesn't have enough clean clothes and whines to Kimberly about it. Kimberly and her ill-fitting bra, which there's huge gaps on the side. I did a side-by-side, which you can see in the visual aids, because now I'm bra cop too, apparently. She and her bra point out that the pile was never going to spontaneously dry clean itself. Michael thinks he can whine Kimberly into doing his laundry along with hers, but Kimberly's not about that life. And honestly, if he's living there rent-free, he should be doing all her laundry just for a start, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Anyway, he tries to change her mind by kissing her. It doesn't work. Some day later, he's having breakfast at the beach house when Sydney comes by to bring him a homemade lasagna. He takes it and then declines to invite her in, basically forcing her to shove past him. He doesn't recall having given her his address, which she saw on legal documents at the apartment. And when she wanders into the bedroom and sees the pile of clothes on the floor, she jokes that she can't let him live like this. And I am infuriated that he just left the pile there from like a different day and was just sitting having breakfast while it was there. Like, at least kick it into a closet. What are you, a fucking animal? Like, it made me so angry.
Well, and based on what we've seen of the layout of that place, like, they must have in-unit washer dryer.
For sure. Yes.
At least put it in the washer, even if that's as far as you get, which I also don't understand. Mm-hmm. What, while I'm up, fucking pasta cop over here, lasagna traditionally has some tomato somewhere in it. Like from the side in a Pyrex dish, it should not look like ricotta with some chives in it.
It's very white. You can see that in the visual aids as well.
Yeah. A noodle. Some tomatoes. Yeah. AMA.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right about the laundry. Like, even if he was, if his thing is like, well, and then I would have to press it. Like, you wear a lab coat. Just wear a wrinkled shirt. No one gives a shit. Anyway.
Yeah, it's true.
So, back to the laundry again. Michael hesitates for about 2 seconds before manipulating Sydney into convincing him to let her do his housework. She doesn't care if Jane doesn't like it. And the next day, Jane wakes up Sydney on her way out to work and lectures her about keeping the place clean. And as soon as she's gone, Sydney sneaks Michael's clothes out from under her bed and creepily sniffs them, which you can also see in the visual aids. Oh, Sydney.
Oh, Sydney.
Jane has to come back right away and almost catches her washing the clothes in the basement, but doesn't. And when Sydney has finished the laundry and is delivering it to the beach house later, she is very surprised to find Kimberly lying out on the deck. Awkward introductions are made and an awkward conversation ensues in clip four.
Who are you?
I'm his sister-in-law, Sydney. Who are you?
I'm a friend of Michael's, an associate. We work together.
Oh. Is he home?
No, he's not. Ask what you're doing with his laundry.
Oh, this. They're just some clothes that Michael left at the apartment that Jane asked me to return.
Well, thank you. I'll make sure that he gets them.
Okay, sure. Thanks.
Goodbye now.
So it begins.
So Kimberly then puts on a dress and goes to the hospital to yell at Michael about his new personal assistant in clip five.
Great.
Michael, this is not funny. Why on God's earth is Jane's sister doing your laundry?
Would you calm down, Kimberly? I told you she was in town, right? And I told you we were out to lunch?
Yes, but you neglected to mention that she was running a fluff and fold service.
Right. Well, she felt bad for me and she wanted to help out, so I let her do my wash.
Oh, how big of you.
Well, yeah, but I never thought you'd be stupid enough to answer the door.
I happen to be laying out on the deck.
The point is, no one is supposed to know we're living together, especially Jane. Now you've gone and blown everything. You know, Jane probably sent Sydney over to spy on me. And now she's going to run on home and tell her all about you.
Michael, I will not let you turn this one on me. I do have the right to lay out on my own deck, don't I?
I'm sorry. You're right. You're right. I just thought I could credit you with a tiny bit of discretion, but forget about it. No, forget it. You know, let Jane know everything. Let her soak me for everything I've got. Who gives a damn?
Michael, look, I'm sorry. It's just that I thought you left Jane so that we could stop sneaking around, and now it seems like we're sneaking around more than ever.
Dr. Phillips to pharmacy, second floor. Dr. Phillips to pharmacy, second floor.
Now, does that feel like sneaking around to you?
I just want this whole thing to be over with.
So do I, but the damage is done. So let's forget about it, okay?
Fine.
Now, you better get out of here quick before I lose control and rip your panties off in the supply closet.
Oh!
Sexy!
couple of things. Number one, I still would. Sorry. Number two, all this talk of sneaking around, they're like in the middle of the hallway. Like, they are not sneaking around with their colleagues in any meaningful way. So I don't know what she's bitching about, truly.
Yeah. Also, what is he bitching about? Like, you don't actually care.
Yeah. Seriously.
It's like he's trying to make her feel bad to see if he can.
Oh, yeah. Yes. A lot of these scenes with Michael manipulating women, it just seems like he's doing it for sport, like to keep his skills up.
Totally.
So the next morning, Michael looks both ways before knocking on Jane's door, looking for Sydney and confirming that he waited for Jane to leave work before approaching. The reason he came by was to make sure that Sydney understands Kimberly is just a friend. He wouldn't want Sydney to mention Kimberly to Jane and let it get blown way out of proportion. Sydney knows how hard things are for both of the Mancinis right now and would never say anything that might antagonize Jane. And Michael takes this at face value and gets ready to leave, but Sydney starts mooching for compliments on her laundry skills. He confirms she did a great job, but he's going to send his stuff out from now on. But she loves doing things for him, and as she puts her arms around him, she purrs that she hates the idea of losing such a great brother-in-law. He's got to get back to work, but first puts his finger on her lips to confirm this is all their secret, and she promises it is. And of course, that's Sarah noted the picture that she cut for the visual aids, the new forehead kiss, or the poor man's forehead kiss, rather.
Yep.
Oh, boy, Sydney. On to our A plot. Now who's the stalker? Billy.
Oh, boy.
So we open the story with Allison's nightmare of Keith's attempted assault, and it is A, awful, and B, a really aggressive way to start the episode, which it does, despite where it is in our podcast. She is wakened by her ringing phone, and when she sits up, this is also where we see she's cut off a lot of her hair. It looks a lot better, I have to say. Did you notice and agree?
I did notice. I do not agree. I mean, if she styled it any kind of way.
Right.
But she settled for like sort of putting it up to the side on the like the wrong side. And she needs to not have a blunt bob. And it just looks dowdy. It's like everything else that Allison wears. Like, even if it's cute in theory, once it's on her, you're like, ugh.
Fair. So it's Billy on the phone to see if she got his lying note about going out of town on assignment. He tells her to go to work and try to relax. Terrible advice, even though she's so traumatized she can't concentrate. And he adds that Keith is in Seattle and can't hurt her. She lets him convince her and tells him to hurry back. And he hangs up and reminds himself of the return address on a letter that Keith sent Allison that Billy then stole. And we cut from an overcast establishing shot of Seattle to bright, sunny, obviously L.A., which you can see in the visual aids because I gifted, as Billy goes to the alleged address in alleged Seattle where Keith allegedly lives, and he knocks, but no one's there. So Billy then lets himself in the barely locked back door to find evidence of Keith's mental state in the extremely disgusting, messy kitchen. I guess I'm cleanliness cop for everybody this week, but the kitchen is disgusting. You can see this in the visual aids as well.
Like, why are you throwing... note to PAs, like, it's one thing to have stacked up disgusting dishes, fine, but like, I don't care how crazy he is he actually throwing like paper garbage in there?
Yeah,
but who knows? Well, he has a collection of headshots. He's obviously departed from reality.
Well, yes, we're about to get there. Before we move on from the kitchen, though, I just wanted to note he has three like metal outdoor trash cans at one end of the kitchen. Like, what kind of freak? Anyway, as Sarah said, he is sleeping on a bare mattress in the living room next to a full shrine of Courtney Thorne Smith's like professional headshots, all framed, and clearly are like press photos from this program, because she's in the same outfit in several of them. The photo work from the prop department, really very lazy.
I know. I really was expecting to see one that she had like signed with a Sharpie, Dylan style.
Anyway, back in LA, Amanda's in her office when Ferris Bueller's dad, here named Doug, comes in to welcome D&D's newest VP. He also wanted to pick up the famous family restaurant's proposal. Amanda says her associate was working on it. Amanda doesn't have it yet, so way to almost get raped and miss a work deadline, Allison. But Amanda covers by promising to get it to him later that day. He wants to see it now. Blah, blah, blah. There's awkwardness as, you know, she has to cover for Allison and hates it. Lies to Doug that Allison's having a tough time getting it out of the computer. And after Amanda has called her in and yelled the situation at her, Allison apologizes and said she had a traumatic weekend. Amanda wants her to define what traumatic means. Allison would prefer not to, and then claims she didn't know there was a deadline. Like, it's work. Of course there was a deadline. Like,
yeah.
What?
Also, why? I mean, I get it, and it's, I guess, an interesting attempt at not just a character beat, but, like, whatever, creating a conflict in the storyline with Amanda, but Just fucking tell her what happened.
Yeah. Yes. And I understand that the reason is that, you know, they have their personal beef and Allison doesn't trust her. But I also sort of thought like they had moved past that. And like, this is clearly a different situation. Like,
yeah,
whatever. Amanda's basically
like one which can be verified with a call to the precinct.
Right.
Like, whatever. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, Amanda basically says she's not going to cover for Allison again. And then we're back in Seattle where Keith is at work leading a tour of environmental mitigation measures that at this oil refinery. Billy pulls up, stomps up the stairs of whatever catwalk they're on and confronts Keith in front of all of the business people with him. And Keith walks about 4 feet away for this. Clip six.
What are you doing here, Billy?
I came here to tell you one thing. If you ever bother Allison again, if you call her, if you write her, if you ever go near her, I'll kill you.
Ooh. Somebody call the police.
No. No. It won't be necessary. It's all right. Finished, pal?
No way. Not by a long shot.
Neither am I. I'll be seeing you soon, Billy. You can bet on it.
Ooh! I mean, everything about that is insane. Starting with the lady who's like, I'm going to call the cops, even though she wore pumps on like a lattice metal set of stairs. Like, did you not know what job you had today? Flats.
Mm-hmm.
Hello? And then no, I mean, Moses, God love you.
Yeah, committing 5,000%,
118,000% in every scene.
So Allison is at home having her coffee the next morning when a very angry Keith calls in clip seven.
You call her again, and I'm going back to the police.
Well, if you don't tell Billy to stop harassing me, I'm going to do the same thing.
What are you talking about?
He paid me a visit, didn't you know?
Of course I knew.
You don't understand. He's twisted everything around so that you'll hate me.
I do hate you, Keith. In fact, I wish you were dead.
His phone receiver slam. Did you cut a gif of this?
Yeah, of course.
It's extremely Twyla. I just like knowing what I know about how this is going to end, namely that it is. Mm-hmm. I'm just enjoying the silent movie commitment of Mr. William R. Moses.
Yeah. Oh, it's not even over in this scene, because then he very melodramatically takes one of the 5 million Allison framed photos and hurls it at the wall, and we get to watch it like the glass shatter and it falls in slow motion down to the ground. Like, it's ridiculous. There's a gif of that as well.
Yeah, it's really a lot. And then Keith Ferratu is like, I mean, he's just everything at every moment.
Yeah. So then back in LA, Amanda's at the door. Her Porsche won't start. She needs a ride to work. But this is like such a dumb pretext for them to get together. Like, you have a Porsche. Like, what do you mean it won't start? This is never brought up again. That also bugged me, which is dumb of me. But anyway. And then Billy's also there getting back from his trip. Allison can't fully interrogate him about what he did in Seattle until Amanda takes off. Billy tries to put off the discussion until after work that night, but Allison gives him a preview of how it may go in clip eight.
I have just been through a very rough experience. What I need right now is support, not lies. I thought you would realize that.
Well, you know, fair point.
Yeah.
All right. So that night, when we rejoin them, Allison's pouring vodka in a water glass as she lectured Billy about having done something so reckless and going to Seattle to beat up Keith. And she also thinks, based on their phone call, that Billy may have antagonized Keith more. Billy says they'll just change the number and keep it unlisted, as if Keith does not know where they live on the ground floor of this ungated apartment complex. She's freaked out that she's vulnerable right when she got this promotion and is supposed to be proving herself at work, but she can't concentrate. And Billy's brilliant advice is to tell Amanda what happened, which, I mean, yes, now it's kind of too late. But anyway, clip 9.
No. Amanda hated him. She'll just find a way to turn this around and use it against me.
Well, she also hates you, so as well. Yeah.
Who doesn't?
So then, it's the next day. Allison's pulled an all-nighter, her panic about work having overtaken her panic about Keith, which sounds very healthy when Billy staggers in. When she goes to take a shower, Billy finally apologizes for the whole Seattle misadventure. She is sorry, too, and opines that Billy has too much testosterone, among other things. He's just madly in love with her and wanted to help, and she forgives him and asks him never to mention the K word again. When she steps into the shower, he joins her. She has to get to work. That's the whole point of her staying up all night. Let the woman concentrate on one thing. Anyway, speaking of work, Allison's in a big meeting when some stooge comes to the door and tells her Billy's on the phone for her and said it's urgent, and Amanda is pissed. But when Allison picks up the phone, clip 10.
It's not Billy.
That's it. I'm calling the police.
Don't bother. I'll be dead.
What?
I'm destroyed by what I've done to you, Allison. There's no way I can make peace with myself.
So help me. If this is some kind of a stunt.
I love you, Allison. God, I love you. I'm consumed by you, but I can never be with you.
Oh, Keith.
I've got a gun. It's loaded.
No.
Just call it to say goodbye. I'm sorry. So very sorry.
Wait! Wait, wait. This is crazy. You're just depressed. Now put the gun down.
Why? Give me one good reason.
Because... because deep inside, I know what a wonderful person you are.
How can you say that after all I put you through and done to you?
You can't throw your life away over one bad relationship. Put the gun down and get some help now.
I always love you, Allison. Please forgive me.
Keith? No! Goodbye now.
Oh, brr.
Just watching Dave at the other end of the table laughing at his amazing joke. But yeah, goodbye now, Keith.
Wow. Yeah. Well.
I kind of like how she starts it. This better not be some kind of stunt. Like, if you're going to threaten it, you better do it. You know.
And then he's like, click. She's like, ooh.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Do you think they would show this today?
Yes. You don't?
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know.
I think they might. I mean, it's not like the gunshot happens off screen. Like she hears it, but true. They don't show it. Like maybe they might duck out the audio and just have her react so we can tell what she's hearing, but we don't hear it. But I mean.
Yeah. No, I was just wondering if you thought it would be done the same way.
Yeah.
On the other hand, also, it is a nighttime soap and we don't see a body. So.
Right.
I mean, I don't think we ever see him again.
No. I think he's dead for real. After the commercial, Allison is crying and drinking vodka and Billy is not helping in clip 11.
The Seattle police confirmed that he killed himself. He's obviously a very messed up individual. I mean, he even admitted that...
I could have done something. I could have said something to stop him.
It's not your fault.
The last time he called, I told him that I hated him. I told him I wished he were dead.
Well, after everything he put you through, you had a right to feel that way.
I can't believe it.
It's okay.
Nothing is ever going to change the fact that he killed himself because of me.
I mean, I complain about the whining, and I'm sure I will continue to complain about it in the future, but Courtney Thorne Smith, good at crying.
Yeah. She's also good at being slurry, barely maintaining drunk, which will appear in a clip or two.
Yep.
Yeah, she really does a good job in this scene. Mm-hmm. Not sure that the Brandon Walsh, I'm realizing something about an issue as it pertains to the most important person in the world, myself, baby voice, is the play here.
Right.
But I mean, he's like, given the work that she's doing, he's just lucky that he's not being like blown off the screen completely
yes.
by someone competent. So
yeah.
Yay.
Even so, like the takeaway from the scene is like, Allison, go find an adult to talk to you about this, please.
Yeah.
Cause as usual, he is not up to the conversation.
No.
Instead, she goes to a business lunch at the Bellage with Amanda and some clients and a very ugly blouse you can see in the visual aids. And which is when her mind starts drifting to imagining Keith shooting himself, and Amanda has to repeat Allison's name to get her attention. Embarrassing Amanda and Allison secondarily, but mostly Amanda. The clients sidle off to avoid the awkward scene they know is going to follow, which it does when Amanda decides standing next to the table is the right place to yell at Allison for being so distracted. In the course of this reaming, we learn that Allison drank 3 martinis, which is not acceptable, to be fair to Amanda.
No. And also, it is not the 70s.
No.
What are you doing?
And Allison doesn't really help her cause, probably because she is wasted in clip 12.
I'm sorry. I am really sorry. I'm going through a really terrible crisis is really the only way to describe it.
Believe it or not, Allison, you are not the only one in the world with a personal life. But since it clearly prohibits you from functioning in any kind of constructive manner, I think you should just go home.
No, Amanda, I'm fine.
I said go home. Excuse me, could you call her a cab?
Mm-hmm. That really won't be necessary.
Oh, yes, it is. Because by the way, you're drunk.
Yeah.
She is. We got that from, I'm going through a really terrible crisis. Like, perfectly done. Tory yeah. Spelling level drunk portrayal. Well done, lady.
So this is such a wake-up call that in the very next scene, it's nighttime. Allison is still in her work clothes, and she's at Joe's drinking a large glass of rosé and murmuring about all the guilt she feels is crushing her. Joe is dismayed that Allison didn't tell her the whole Keith story earlier, but Allison says she couldn't. She was ashamed that she led Keith on, and that's why he tried to rape her. And Joe makes her stop that talk immediately. Clip 13.
You know that is not true. That's what men say to absolve themselves. I don't care if this guy's dead. You sure as hell are not going to give him that.
Thank you, show.
Joe!
Yeah. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, show.
Yeah.
Anyway, Allison, thank God, agrees that she's right. Joe then reminds us all that her own mother died by suicide when Joe was 10. She thought her mother did it because Joe was bad, but it's taken her whole life for Joe to get over that feeling, and she's still not sure it's lost completely. But she knows you can't numb the pain to get through it. Allison will just give herself a hangover and feel worse about life in the morning, so she just needs to let it be hard for a while. Joe promises it'll get better and reminds Allison that she has someone downstairs who loves her very much and probably just wants to hold her. And Allison can't let Keith destroy that, too. So Allison thanks Joe and goes home, where Billy is watching an old movie and looking like a doof. Seriously, like, he's got the TV on and he's sort of reading a magazine. And at one point he glances up at the TV and his mouth is hanging open, catching flies. Like, you, Andrew Hsu, you do yourself no favors, truly.
No, when you said he's looking like a doof, I'm like, and?
Well.
Duh.
Yeah, he's in a scene. I could have stopped there. Anyway, she tells him she had a bad day, but she realized she loves him and doesn't want to let anything get in the way of that. Unfortunately, then they start kissing, and it's a lot. You can see that in the visual aids because I gifted, sorry. But later, After Billy has fallen asleep, Allison sneaks out of bed, gets down the vodka, sits down on the couch, and gasps as she drinks it. And that's where we leave things in the episode. Let us close things up by naming our episode MVP. Not a surprise, because he's been killing it, as it were, the last couple episodes. But I'm going to say William R. Moses, R.I.P. Keith. I mean, not really, but excellent portrayal of a complete wacko that you committed to with all of your heart and soul.
Yeah, these episodes were quite dull, except for Keith. I will join in that decision, but I'm also going to say Joe, who expresses admiration for Amanda's string pulling and sets Allison straight about whose fault Keith's bullshit is, namely Keith's. So good for her.
Agreed. Least valuable player. I'm going to say Allison, because no one's arguing that she's not going through a hard time, but handle your business like an adult. When you have a crime almost perpetrated upon you, you can tell your boss and take a couple of personal days and get your shit together so she doesn't just think you're a flake, because there have been times when you were just a flake and she's within her rights to think that this is no different because you haven't told her that it is.
Yeah. I'm going to say the D&D employee handbook for A, not making it clear that you have access to resources such as personal days at times like this.
Yep.
B, not devoting an entire page in a 64-point font to the point that you don't fucking drink at lunch.
Great. We did it.
Yeah, we did. Speaking of vodka, next time on Again With This, a Russian lady has the hots for Matt. Jake feels the heat from an insurance investigation, and Allison doesn't do much to resist the fiery embrace of store brand vodka, which may get her fired. Set your corneas ablaze with our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. They're on our website at againwiththispodcast.com, where you can also pre-order a very special Beverly Hills 90210 book. Not a bit. You can follow us on Twitter at AWT90210, and you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/againwiththis, where any level of support gets you 2 extra episodes a month. I'm 3 Martini Lunch, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at TrinoNation. My co-host is Portius Ex Machina, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano, and our producer is Silent Movie Hang-Up, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
That episode will be dropping on April 24th. Right? No.
Get your shit together.
I'm sorry.